It's good to be here with you all today. I'm happy to see so many people out to hear about rattlesnakes, among other things. First off, a little about me. I live in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and attend a church there by the same name, and with my very patient wife, Allison, and I'm also the father of three very busy children, Edmund, Ellie, and Caroline, who are also all under three or under currently. And the interesting thing about that is that the first two of them surprised us by arriving at the same time. It was a several months warning, but still a wonderful surprise. I'm here today, perhaps in part, because maybe I'm not quite normal, or don't have the proper boundaries or something like that, I suppose. I've gained a little bit of a reputation for one part of my interest in nature, but actually I've kind of been afflicted my entire life by an insatiable desire to experience and learn more about God's creation, and I trust that's not unique to me here and through the natural world. This interest takes many forms, like trail running, art. There's some just photos that I enjoy taking, trail running, art, photography, and just rambling around the woods to scratch the itch. Particularly enjoy hiking. There's some art. Credit to Ned Smith for the inspiration there. There's a bird that we found just sitting there roosting one time while we were out rattlesnake hunting. Just walked up to it and picked it up. It's an ovenbird, I believe. A vireo. I didn't look closely at it recently, but very neat encounter. I love bug collecting. Go through these rather quickly, by the way. Check out, see if you see anything interesting about that nest. Most birds don't have eggs that are different shapes and sizes, so you can tell me afterwards what's going on there. But that's pretty neat. I said I don't always have proper boundaries. This happens to be a snake. That happens to be a hognose. There we actually caught the hognose and have a bunch of people that were at the park there looking at it. These actually live in Pennsylvania. Doesn't that look like something out of a rainforest? It's a little green snake. This would be your coral snake. Red on yellow killer fellow. That one didn't survive the CASP team very well, but very beautiful snake. Like watching birds at the feeder, sometimes you get some really interesting ones. once again, I'll let you guys see if you can find that one in the bird book, I guess. So before we dive into rattlesnakes, I want to talk a little bit about fear versus understanding. To me, that is a majestic animal. Just look at him pacing across the field there up in central Pennsylvania. He's kind of walking into the sunset. I don't know what goes through your mind when you see a sight like that. But what is it about an elk, a majestic animal like that, that thrills us so? Makes me wonder sometimes. That's an incredible animal right there. Hundreds of pounds, potentially very dangerous. I've heard of people that have got injured badly by them. And yet, it's beautiful. There's no one who doesn't enjoy seeing that sight that I'm aware of. But for some reason, the natural reaction to a rattlesnake is not quite the same. I'm not sure why that is, to be honest, but even for me, I don't have quite the same reaction. Perhaps it's because the snake was cursed at the fall, but then again, weren't we all? Perhaps it's because of our fear of something lying in wait to bite us. I'm not quite sure.
but we'll get into that a little more later. People have long noticed snakes, and I do believe that just because they're different, they're limbless, doesn't necessarily make them evil. As a matter of fact, it's even been proven that babies are not innately afraid of snakes. They learn this from the expressions of their parents. Although I'm pretty sure my wife was innately afraid of snakes. She won't mind me saying. So right off the bat, I want to eliminate a few falsehoods about our friend the rattlesnake. That's one that was up in along Pine Creek Valley there. So, the Appalachian Mountains, sort of this area, has this story of a hoop snake. How many of you have ever heard of a hoop snake? I'm just curious. All right. So the hoop snake is this terrible creature that waits in hiding and watching for basically people to come walking past, as I understand. And when a hoop snake sees you walking, he'll put his tail in his mouth. He's probably 10 foot long, and he'll come down in this huge ball rolling faster than anyone can run. And when he gets close to you, he pops into a straight line and flies through the air. And if his tail hits you, you're goners. It might not even be very painful. Now, sometimes if you're really smart, you might be able to duck behind a tree at the last minute, and he'll stick into the tree, and then the tree will shrivel up and die. He's that poisonous. This is a myth about snakes. You will not actually see a hoop snake. It's important that I clarify that because I do have three-year-olds. So there are a lot of other myths, though, that surround these interesting creatures. And I'll just go over a few of them stated. Once again, this is false. These are myths. But rattlesnakes are poisonous. Rattlesnakes are the only snakes that shake their tails. Rattlers are evolving to rattle less and strike more quickly. Rattlers can change color. Count the rattles and you'll know how old the snake is. Rattlesnakes are aggressive and sometimes chase people. Baby rattlesnakes are more poisonous than adults. Or baby rattlesnakes are not poisonous at all. If you're bitten by a rattlesnake, be sure you cut the wound and suck it out, and then always use a tourniquet. Okay, none of those things are true. Please don't do that. Some of them have some truth in them. But we'll get into that a little bit later. The rattlesnake is America's snake, so to speak. It only lives in the Americas. The first pioneers encountered the timber rattler specifically, which is the type we have around here, when they landed on America's shores. And as an animal that was content to blend in with its surroundings, but was also capable of dealing a death blow if necessary, the rattler has served as a symbol of strength and a warning against provocation since early colonial times. So this was an animal that was revered by the colonists. Ben Franklin divided it up. How many of you, I'm sure this is, some of you at least have seen this picture before. And to him, it was a symbol of unity. How many of you have heard his quote, "We should all hang together or we shall all hang separately," among the revolutionary rebels? He used a snake to illustrate that. And I believe this was supposed to be a rattlesnake. It's not maybe a great drawing. Another common place where we see the rattlesnake in our culture, even today, is the Gadsden flag. Don't tread on me. Once again, be careful. So we have removed a lot of animals from our wilderness that were originally here. We used to have mountain lions in our woods. We've used to have bison roaming these hills. We used to have elk much more commonly than this small area where they've been reintroduced currently. But you can still hike up to a remote mountain peak and look on a boulder, and you may just find a giant rattlesnake surveying the landscape below. And so, a lot of that is quoted directly from Dr. Chris Jenkins, who also did a talk on rattlesnakes. But to me, that's inspiring. I really do find that to be a neat thing. It's something, they're kind of the stuff of legend, and when you actually hike up on a mountain, most likely any of these mountains, if you look really well, you could probably find one if you know where to look. So my goal here today is that as we learn about this unique creature, that we can gain a respect for it that goes beyond the only good rattlesnake is a dead rattlesnake, and possibly even learn to value and enjoy their iconic wildness. I really enjoyed this. I once had a friend that I like to go hiking a lot, and so I was out, might have even been checking some trail cameras or something, I was out hiking up in the mountains around Wilkes-Barre where I live, and there's a boy from the city there, big macho guy, and he could keep up with me. He forgot, only brought his slides, and he still managed to keep up with me, doing great. And but he was kind of acting a little bit nervous throughout, and so eventually I asked him what's going on. Yeah, he's a little worried about snakes. Well, I've hiked around 50 miles up here. There's I've never once come across a snake, I told him. And it wasn't too very long after that that we saw this. This happens to be the biggest rattlesnake I've ever seen. It was probably around 5 foot long plus. And it was just, you know, relaxing there in the sunshine in a basking area in the summer. So, by the way, I mentioned basking area. If you have something to write on, or maybe even if you don't, I did have that vocabulary sheet handed out. See how many of those words, you can hold me accountable afterwards if you listened and I missed one, but see how many of those words you can find definitions for as I go along. So we are observing this rattlesnake, and my friend, we'll call him Frank, was there, and I wanted to get a good picture of it, so I was kind of using a stick to rearrange it, and he began to look even more agitated. And then I had him pose a good ways back, as you can see, but to get a good picture. And he began asking me strange questions that I just didn't have make sense of, like, so which direction was the car again, and stuff like that. And after a little bit, it finally clicked in my mind, like, he's actually worried that I might soon be deceased here. And he's going to need to find his own way back. And so I just enjoyed that thoroughly. I've told the story ever since. So that's the story there of which direction is the car. And it's for that reason that I'm actually pretty proud of each of you who attended today, even the ones who are profoundly scared. Today we want to move away from some of the menacing caricatures of the rattler that we perhaps are more familiar with, because one of the best antivenins for fear is an understanding that leads to a healthy curiosity. And so, and as I said, healthy curiosity, mine might go slightly beyond that, but so what is a rattlesnake? Well, taxonomically, that'd be how you classify it. It's in the animal kingdom. It, not the spiritual kingdom, it is the phylum Crenatia, the class of reptiles, the order Squamata with lizards and other amphibians, and then the family Viperidae, which would be like vipers and pit vipers. More on pit vipers later specifically, but I believe it's the genus name is Crotalus, which means little bell, or castanet, or rattle, it could be translated from the Latin. So that's pretty cool. The common name, horridus, which means bristle or shudder, isn't quite as friendly to the rattlesnake. But, and then further classifying it, like the screech owls we saw this morning, rattlesnakes come in two phases. So you might have the yellow or the light phase, that color morph. And then you also have the black phase. They're both the same species. A mom could have two that were both from the same phase, as far as I'm from different phases, as far as I'm aware, from the same mom. But that's the color variety that you get, and then everything in between. Just really, in my opinion, some really beautiful patterns that we have there. This is their range for the timber rattler specifically. Rattlesnakes in general would go further. But the timber rattler lives across the eastern United States, and their size is generally between 3 foot to 5 foot is a normal rattler. If you get any bigger than that, it's very large, 1.5 to 3 pounds. And the record length of a timber rattlesnake is 75.6 inches. So For reference, that's about 6 foot. And I think this was a timber, I'm not sure, was once weighed at around almost 10 pounds, 9.9 pounds. So they can get pretty big sometimes. So I'm curious what your questions are about the rattlesnake. Actually, we could probably take questions a lot of the time here, but think about them and save them if you have the chance. We'll hope to have a time for questions at the end, which, Andrew, I forget, what exact time are we looking at for quitting here?
We're looking at 2:15. 2:15,
all right. Yep. So we think about how we can learn about an animal, especially an animal we don't know much about. This list of questions has been helpful to me. It was interesting listening to the other speakers, how they answered these questions. But what does this animal's calendar look like? What's unique about it? How does it meet its needs for shelter? What about finding its food? How does it avoid becoming food for other animals? And how does it reproduce? Lots of interesting things if you can just answer those questions for any animal. So let's do that for the rattlesnake. What's unique about the rattlesnake? Well, one thing that separates it from us, for instance, maybe isn't exactly unique, is that it's an ectotherm, which basically means cold-blooded. So it draws its temperature from the air and the substances it crawls over. And this is extremely important to rattlesnakes. Their entire life history is tied to managing their temperature. And by the way, they're also incredibly expert at it. And so as we go through their annual cycle, consider that. Let's see if our next slide is here. Oh, that's one thing I forgot to say on the black and yellow face. Each rattlesnake's pattern is unique. This is the pattern of the scales from one that I actually ended up harvesting. Just absolutely beautiful yellow phase rattlesnake. So the beginning of the year, prior to April, mid-April they emerge from their dens. Prior to that, they're in a state of hibernation, which for rattlesnakes is called bromation. Ectotherms in general, actually, they're bromation. And they do this in small caves, which are also known as their hibernacula. So their bromation ends, and they come out of their hibernacula. Now you can already sound like you're talking Greek to most people, right? So we're out of our hibernation. And it normally begins late April. Sometimes the last ones are still coming out at the end of May. And usually within a few days outside their dens after emerging, they'll head towards their basking areas. And this is a significant migration for them. Rattlesnakes are slow, quite calm creatures. And so to leave their den, they have to get out, especially in that time of spring, get enough warmth to move to the next safe location. And they want to know where they're going. And they'll have a number of staging dens typically till they get up to the basking areas, which are normally a little higher in elevation than their dens. So they're kind of crawling up the mountain. They get to the basking areas, and they do important things like getting warm enough to catch some food or to shed their skin, or for the pregnant females, you know, they're trying to get themselves in good condition. And even stuff like their digestion and their immune system doesn't work very well when they're not up to temperature. Very fascinating. So very important that they have a good, safe area that they can be in, because they're vulnerable until they reach their basking areas. And then from late June to through July, the breeding season starts. This involves a lot more action for the adults. The end of August into September, the young are born. And by the second week of October, most rattlesnakes that are going to survive are already back at their dens, trying to get back there before they're forced into bromation by the colder temperatures. A few times, I have one friend who this actually happened to, you will see them out basking in the late season, like November, or even a warm winter day. And this is extremely unusual, but it can happen for several reasons. Remember I said they need to do everything by how much heat they have? Well, if a snake gets lucky in October and catches a sizable squirrel, and then he, there's a cold snap right after that, well, that meal could actually rot in his stomach because he's not able to digest it, which would be very unhealthy for him if he doesn't come back out. It's also, like I said, it boosts their immune system. Snake fungal disease is a thing of high concern for snakes lately. And even just being out in the sun's ultraviolet rays can cleanse and sanitize their skin. So, I want to talk a little bit about their shelter and where they live. I mentioned the dens and also these basking areas, the satellite dens. They're all very, very specific places that rattlesnakes have used for generations. So if you find a snake in the woods at a specific point in the year, there's a very good chance you'll find him in that specific place and at that specific time the next year. Now, I've seen a little bit of this, but I haven't been out enough in the woods to know this for certain. But there are stories of a snake that would come to a wildlife visitor center at a specific time of year. It happened to be the board meeting when everyone was there, and he would lay right beside the walking trail and scare the board members who were there to support wildlife. And they said it happened to them he would come back that time a year at least four, maybe five times. And two of the times it was during the board meeting. One time he really made a big show and got himself posted all over social media by swallowing an endangered ground squirrel or something right in front of the board members. So, interesting, they come back to the specific place, and these places are very important to them because they're vulnerable if they don't know where to go. If you're a bird, you can just fly somewhere else. If you're a rattlesnake, your range is pretty small. You're going to be lost without it. So they're the places where they hunt, the places where they shed, and the places where they have their babies are super important to them. This brings up a small point. I do some rattlesnake hunting, and occasionally I've even harvested one, but if you ever do capture a rattlesnake, it's very important to take it back to the exact location. Moving them even a few hundred yards can disorient them, possibly even to the point that they'll never find their way back home. A study showed that in 11 snakes that were moved, 6 of them died before the next year, and they looked at 18 snakes that were not moved, and only 2 of them died. So that's kind of how important it is to a snake to have a place that they're familiar with and call home. Maybe a few of you can identify with that, I don't know. So the most important place that they have is their den, and pulling a lot of this from a researcher by the name of Adrian Slade that has a lot of really good material out there. But she says that in the spring and fall, the snakes are just laying around, basking in the sun, piling on top of one another like nonchalant dragons. And these dens are sacred places for the snakes, where they're extremely vulnerable. And I would advise, if you do know where a den site is, that you don't probably just tell everyone that you know, because if someone would come in and kill all of those snakes, it could really devastate the local population. Rattlesnakes are also very social creatures. Probably don't have time to get into a lot of that, but it's very interesting. Where do rattlesnakes den? It can be in talus slopes. See if we can look. This guy's here at a ledge den. He's just hanging out, basically. But could be in talus slopes, could be at the bottom of a rocky ledge, or sometimes they'll just be in rocks that are kind of, they call them fallen rock dens, but they're in the soil, and they need to be able to get deep enough into a den to escape the freeze line. Rattlers do not overwinter to stay warm. They overwinter to avoid freezing. And that's an important distinction because their body temperatures can actually fall into the 30s, high 30s, and they'll still be fine the next spring. So one of my friends that found this rattlesnake in November, he did something I don't think I would ever feel comfortable doing, but he actually picked it up and held it and didn't secure the head at all or anything, and it was too slow and too cool to do anything about it. It didn't even attempt to strike or bite them. Like I said, I don't advise that, but because they can cope with very cold temperatures, occasionally they are very docile. Right, the next area that they go from their dens in the spring would be the staging dens. These are sort of along their migratory route that they always take every year up towards the basking areas. And then finally they'll make it to the basking areas. And this is where, like I said, they will tend to do their shedding, which, by the way, is also a very vulnerable time for a rattlesnake because the skin dies. And if you know what happens with dead skin, like if you look at a blister, it turns all white. I believe I forgot to include a slide of that here. But the rattlesnake will actually become nearly blind when he's about ready to shed. And so a basking area that he's really familiar with, he can just stay mostly in the shade, and he can use his heat sensing pits to thermoregulate his body temperature and find cooler areas until he can shed that skin and actually see again, is going to be really helpful to him. Another thing about these dens is they have to be the right temperatures. During the summer, the surface of the granite can get up to 120 degrees, and that would be very lethal for a rattlesnake. So they need places that they can go out in the sun in the morning, and then during the day they can go in where it's cool and then come out again in the evening. What you would call that is crepuscular. Deer are very similar for other reasons. Finally, the staging areas are not used all summer. Rattlesnakes will go out and forage from there and then kind of return back to them. But one snake that does tend to use these basking areas a lot are the pregnant females. You could describe pregnant in snakes with the word gravid. And a gravid female actually we call them birthing rookeries, but they would be at these basking areas. And it would be a bunch of, lady rattlesnakes that all came from the same family. They know each other pretty well. They have their babies in the same area. Kind of interesting. They need a really good safe area to raise their young. So how do rattlesnakes have their children? Well, first, the way that you would distinguish between a male and a female, and I don't have any great illustrations here, but here I have a guy, a friend of mine, on his first rattlesnake hunt, learning how to handle rattlesnakes. And when you see right where his hand is there, that is the tail of the rattlesnake. A rattlesnake will get noticeably shorter at a certain part there, right behind its vent. And so that's the tail. And you can actually lift the tail up and count how many subcaudal scales are under that tail. And typically, if it has 21 or more, it's a male. And if it has less than that, it's harder to tell if it's a male or a female. But in Pennsylvania, it's only legal to harvest male rattlesnakes because the population is not thriving. Here is my group at boys' camp. We were doing a hike on this trail, and we posed right at this rock outcropping. Walked down the trail past, maybe from me to the front bench away. Never knew that there was a den with possibly dozens of rattlesnakes right down here a few feet away. So that was very interesting. Only found out about the den later and came back to take a look at some of the snakes. So there's snake just out and about. Maybe he would be doing what we're calling foraging in the vicinity of that den.
That was actually probably a basking area, sorry, not a den, but these basking areas are where the females have their babies. And so this starts when the males, late June here, before long they'll be starting, they go out scouting. A lot of times when you see a rattlesnake, it's because it's left its familiar areas, and it's oftentimes a male out looking for females. And just like they'll track their food by its smell, the males will also smell the scent of females and follow them around for weeks trying to find one. Creepy, maybe, but that's what the males do with the female rattlesnakes. And eventually they catch up with her, they have their mating. And then the interesting thing is the females don't just have their babies that year. Females only have babies once every 3 or 4 years. And so she might have her babies that year. Sometimes it could go as long as 6 years till she has her babies. But it's always at least the following year. Eventually, the babies are born. And the babies are actually quite large in relation to the females. I'm not sure exactly where I have this picture. There it is. You see that snake? That's the same snake, and it's in decent health both times, but the one is before it had its babies, and the other is afterwards. That's pretty crazy, right? So the females will have between 2 and 20, was the highest number I believe I heard, babies, and they'll actually be up to a foot long, sometimes even 14 inches. So 8 to 12 inches is average. So you can imagine how a little snake that had they described the babies as fairly stocky, babies would be slimmed out a bit, but that's pretty dramatic there, I would say. She has her babies, and for pit vipers, maternal care is actually one of the pillars of what it means to be a pit viper, like a rattlesnake. This is somewhat controversial, but mother snakes have actually, I saw a video of one where the baby came out of the birthing rookery, and the mother snake saw that this herpetologist, which happens to be a snake scientist, was standing there videoing. And so she actually stuck her head out and started poking the baby to make it go back in. So they take good care. Very unique among reptiles, but they take good care of their young. Sometimes even multiple females will share the same den site and help each other take care of each other's babies. So very interesting. These are more pictures of the snakes foraging. I believe those are a little out of order. Here you can see a mother with its babies, and these babies looks like may have already been through their first shed. See there for sure. It generally takes them about 10 days to go through their first shed, 10 days, 2 weeks, and after that they're on their own. But they're born kind of grayish, and then after this first shed, they look like the adults with all the variation in colors and patterns that the adults are appreciated for. And then if you think about the timetable, so I said rattlesnakes need to be back at their den sites that they migrated from in October. Well, these babies are being born between August 20th and September 20th most times. And if they spend about 2 weeks with their mothers, during which the mother can't hunt or anything, that leaves barely any time, especially if they're born in September 20th, for the mother to get back to her den, and the babies who have never been there before. So the mothers and the babies are kind of in a race against time. The mothers, as you saw, are severely depleted and metabolically drained by the experience of pregnancy and the lack of mobility and foraging ability that it caused. And they also have So they really need to get a meal if they can before they head back to their dens. And their body weight can be depleted by as much as up to 50%. And the young, generally less than a month old, need to navigate in a big world for the first time. And oftentimes they're following scent trails, whether by snakes or their mothers, other snakes or their mothers, to get back to their den. But the mortality rate is fairly high. And so if they don't make it back, that's the end of one little baby snake. They say that only 10 to 20% of baby rattlesnakes survive their first year. So 20 babies might sound like a lot, but if only, what's 10% of 20, what's 2? That's not going to result in a lot of rattlesnakes. The cost of, on the adult rattlesnakes, male and female, the cost of reproduction is high because of being out and about. All the statistics for snakes that have made it and had babies, especially males, sighting and roadkill, goes up 4 times. Human mortality goes up 13 times for males, according to one study. And just in general, they're about 3.5 times more active than they normally are. So believe one thing I forgot to mention. So let's do the math on a rattlesnake. If you're a rattlesnake mother, and if you're hoping to have a large family, how many of your babies are going to make it? Well, rattlesnake females are mature enough to mate about 4 to 11 years old. It varies. And rattlesnakes can live up to 30 years. Most in the wild are making 20 or 25. And they can only mate every 3 or 4 years. And so a lot of rattlesnakes actually only end up mating and having babies successfully 3 or 4 times in their lifetime. I think the record is 7. So your average rattlesnake is only for its 25-year life. Female rattlesnake is probably only having about 1 baby every 1.5 to 2 years on average. So they're very, very slow reproducing species. It's one reason if you see a beautiful, mature, 30-year-old rattlesnake to think about it seriously at least before you decide just to dispose of it. It takes, to have a healthy population that's capable of sustaining itself, it takes a den of about 30 rattlesnakes with at least 4 to 5 mature mated females. So that's something to think about. It's something I never would have known or guessed. I want to get into how they get their food, and we're going to go back here to the fact that they're ambush predators. Now, imagine if you were a rattlesnake and you wanted to get a mouse. I've seen about 5 men try to catch a mouse in a room about like this occasionally. It's really enjoyable when there's women around too, standing on the chairs and screaming. But if you're a rattlesnake and you don't have any limbs and you're not faster than about 2 miles an hour, how would you catch a mouse? You have to be pretty scrappy, right? So their strategy generally is to wait by a rodent pathway. This rattlesnake is not waiting for you to step over the log onto him. He's waiting for a squirrel to come by on the log. And they also have to depend heavily on their camouflage here. Because if a rattlesnake is sighted by a bird or a squirrel, all the local forest creatures are likely going to gang up on them, scream and holler, maybe even toss nuts at him, and he's going to have to go find somewhere else to hunt. So they don't want to get busted, or they'll be mobbed by their neighbors, and they need to be very patient. People have observed rattlesnakes sitting in one hunting posture for up to 2 weeks, waiting for something to come past. Now, I'm a hunter, but I have a really hard time sitting longer than 2 or 3 hours. And if I sit a 14-hour day, I really think I did well. A rattlesnake sitting for 2 weeks just waiting for a squirrel to come by is pretty incredible to me. Now, this is it does pay off for them. They have a very slow metabolism that's much more efficient than ours because they are ectotherms, cold-blooded. And if they can get a squirrel, that actually might be all they need for 2 months. So pretty incredible. The average snake probably actually eats 15 times a year or so, but if they get a really big meal like a squirrel, they might not need much else. Some of the structures, we talked a little bit about the pits in the front of their faces. I don't believe I have a grate, another rattlesnake on a log just waiting. Don't believe I have a great picture of those pits, but you can just a little bit see it there on that snake. And there's the babies, freshly shed versus pre-shed, what the baby rattlesnakes look like. Okay, that's a juvenile. We caught him with a group of friends. Yeah, so the pits on the rattlesnake's face, They are the way that the paired structures that he senses heat, and they act in concert with the snake's brain to basically give them thermal vision. And then once he actually ambushes something and bites it, he's going to have his sense of smell, which is pretty incredible, the way that he can pick up molecules and follow it. And he has kind of like a 3D vision effect with his smell because of the forks on his tongue. It can sense where it's coming from. In comparison, we're basically blind with our smell. Imagine being born in a world without color vision. That's sort of what snakes would feel like experiencing life as us is. It does look like we're getting close to the end of our time. We're going to skip ahead a little bit. One interesting feature about rattlesnakes, how they get water, is they do what's called rain harvesting. And the that basically means that whenever it rains, they'll curl up in a ball and try to collect water on their bodies. And then their scales actually have nanochannels in them to increase the surface area that they'll use to collect water and then lick it off of their bodies or each other's bodies. Another important point that I have a couple paragraphs on here is that they use venom for their food, not biting into a giant creature like a human. It's extremely dangerous and more likely to cause the snake's death than the human's, but it's also physiologically costly. Venom can take up to 3 weeks to fill up the snake's venom glands, and that's a long time if you're a rattler that lives in the mountains with the temperatures of the Appalachians and have only about 3 to 5 months of the year during the growing season to get food. Doesn't even take into account the difficulty of ambushing prey. So they're not wanting to bite people. It's kind of a risk reduction strategy to grab their prey, bite it, and let it go as quickly as possible. Another interesting thing is that the The venomous snakes are actually generally less likely to bite you than a non-venomous snake because a non-venomous snake biting is the only defense that they have. So your water snakes, many of them have died because people thought they were copperheads because how much they bit. I want to talk a little bit about rattles. Rattles are made of keratin. They can rattle up to 90 times a second. So that's why it's you can't simulate it. And the number of rattles is the number of times that it sheds. And you can actually tell how good of a health a rattlesnake is in, just like the rings of a tree, by how its rattles look. A little bit on rattlesnake bites. Rattlesnakes are bites are dangerous. We need to handle any snake we see with care, stay away, and the rule is generally 6 foot. If you can stay 6 foot away from a snake, snakes can strike 1/3 to 1/2 of their length. The world record snake was 6 foot. You'll be twice as far away as you need to be in order to be safe. And 1/10 of untreated bites result in deaths. So about 50% of bites actually have venom in them from rattlesnakes. 1/10 result in deaths. And they actually did a test where they found 175 presumably wild rattlesnakes that they used a fake foot to step on by accident. And of those, six actually struck the leg that stepped on them, and the others slithered away into the brush to try and get away. So rattlesnakes are first trying to get away. Second, they'll try and camouflage. Third, they'll give themselves away and rattle. And fourth, if you keep harassing them and you do something dumb like picking them up, you might actually get bitten. So found that very fascinating. A lot of interesting science that we don't have time to go into on how rattlesnakes' venom is like. It's their spit, basically, but how they avoid being poisoned by their own venom. But do not get too close to rattlesnakes. They can strike faster than the blink of a human eye, which is about 1 to 200 milliseconds. A rattlesnake can strike you in as little as 50 milliseconds. And so his head is going through tremendous G-forces. A human fighter pilot would pass out at about 9 Gs, and rattlesnakes have been recorded with their heads going through up to 28 Gs. Imagine that. I have no idea. I probably wasted the most time researching here to try and figure out how a rattlesnake doesn't lose consciousness. And it looks like maybe no one ever wrote a paper on that before, I'm not sure. But let me know if you find that out. So I'm slightly over time here. Rattlesnakes have been considered as an endangered or nearly endangered species, even in our state, for quite some time.
And there's numerous things, especially habitat loss, that affects that. But a lot of this is because they have this K-selected reproductive strategy. That means they're more vulnerable to extinction because of their long generation times, their delayed reproductive maturity, and the level of parental investment in the young. And so I would encourage us, if you see a rattlesnake, to look at it, admire it, and then leave it go again. And if it's in a place that it's not going to cause harm to anybody. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And I think that goes even for snakes. You know, I wasn't able to present this talk at the All Things Bright and Beautiful Nature seminar the other year. But I hope you at least find that a rattlesnake does show evidence of God's design and the complexity that he created. And also maybe don't teach children to be just afraid of snakes. Teach them to be careful and curious. Snakes are not out to get us, but they're a sign that the landscape is still wild. And not just fear and dread, but also joy and wonder should be our emotions when we see one. Learning to live with them is part of learning to live with all of nature. Lots of interesting things, but after snakes were declared good by God, there was the fall. I often wonder if they were venomous before that point. Apparently they didn't crawl on their belly and eat dust like they do now. But they suffered from the curse just like us and have often been a symbol of evil. However, it was a symbol of a snake was a symbol that Jesus that was of Jesus that was lifted up in the wilderness for the Israelites who were bitten by snakes. And God promises that in the new heaven and the new earth, the child will play with the viper. So while we live here on this earth, we still see many aspects of the brokenness of creation, and yet we hope for a day when all creation that currently groans and travails beneath the weight of sin will be redeemed. And perhaps that vision will allow us to see and worship this magnificent work of our Creator in the rattlesnake.